You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Memorial Day, everybody. Welcome into Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. And folks, I'll tell y'all leading off, this is going to be a bit of an atypical episode. We know there's not a ton going on with the Rockets because there's still over a month until July 1st free agency. Really, the NBA as a whole seems to have slowed to a crawl. Everyone's awaiting the Warriors and Cavs in the finals. Unfortunately, because both teams are so dominant, there's over a week without any basketball at all. So I think really everyone around the league is trying to enjoy the holiday as best they can, take a few days to recharge, and then once June gets here, you have obviously the finals, but then getting ready for the draft, and of course July 1st, the beginning of the new league year, which starts with free agency over the first week to two, and as always, that will be a huge thing for Gerald Morey and the Rockets. But with a little bit of downtime, I want to try some new things. I would love to hear y'all's feedback on this after it's over. Again, lockedonrockets@gmail.com is our email address, or on Twitter, @BenDubose or @LockedOnRockets. But one thing I want to do is something I'm going to call Trade Archive, looking back at events throughout Rockets history, but with particular emphasis, I would say, over the past decade, because if it's in the Daryl Morey administration, certainly there's some predictive value that you can take out of that moving forward as we try and figure out what the team may do or not do this offseason and in the future. And I got this idea over the weekend because the real story that broke out, if you want to say an NBA headline, was this appearance that David Stern made on a podcast over the weekend talking about the infamous deal in December 2011 that got voided, that would have sent Pau Gasol to the Rockets, Chris Paul to the Lakers, and then Kevin Martin, Luis Scola, Lamar Odom, Goran Dragic, and a first-round pick to the Hornets. And the idea for the Rockets, of course, they would have gotten Pau Gasol. Back then, Pau was closer to the prime of his career. Was he a potential A-lister on a championship team? I don't know. He was certainly a good number two for those championship Lakers teams, but the Rockets saw him as a piece to build around. They would have paired him with Kyle Lowry, who was staying in place, as well as Nene, presumably. No one ever came out and said it at the time, but that move would have cleared a lot of salary cap room for the Rockets, and they did not really have an entrenched center at the time. So the popular thought was that with the room they would have cleared, they would have then gone after Nene with a core of Lowry, Nene, and Pau Gasol moving forward. Now, looking back, the role that David Stern had in it, of course, that was when the New Orleans franchise was basically being run by the league. They were in the middle of the sale process. So technically, the league owned them. And of course, what ended up happening, the trade was agreed to. They allowed the New Orleans GM to operate on his own, or we thought at the time. But then, of course, when the deal was agreed to, the league vetoed it for basketball reasons, because essentially they did not think that New Orleans was getting enough value. And of course, the irony in it, after the deal fell apart, the trade that did end up working out was sending Paul to the Clippers with a package headlined by Eric Gordon. And of course, a few years later, Gordon being unable to take on that true number one role in New Orleans, a little bit too much to ask of him given his physical limitations and some of the injuries that he's had, actually ended up kind of paving the road for Eric Gordon to eventually join the Rockets. But at the time, I guess the thought was that New Orleans wanted a piece that they could really build around, a young piece, and that grouping that he would have gotten, then they were the Hornets. I want to say the Pelicans. It's so confusing because now the Hornets are in Charlotte and the Pelicans are New Orleans. At that time, they were New Orleans Hornets. I just want to say the New Orleans basketball franchise. That's easier. But yeah, you look at that package, Kevin Martin, Scola, Lamar Odom, Goran Dragic. Now, Dragic did end up eventually breaking out, but at the time, he was a little bit of an unknown. And so, of that package, there was also a first-round draft pick, but there wasn't that one guy you could say, okay, this is a piece we can build around. Whereas that offer from the Clippers, you have a guy like Eric Gordon, and then those first-round picks, that's a little bit easier of a sell, so that's what the NBA wanted to do. And I guess you could say that New Orleans ended up getting a better deal. Personally, I still hold the NBA accountable. My issue with that from the get-go is that if you're not going to let the GM make his own decisions, don't tell him that he can. That was always the problem I have with that from an NBA perspective. It's not a matter of, well, were they justified? Did they end up getting a better deal from the Clippers than they did from the Lakers or Rockets? That's not really the point. The point is that the league, if they wanted to manage it that closely to truly act like an not just an owner, but an aggressive owner that's willing to basically overrule the GM. If they were willing to do that, they should have made it clear from the outset rather than let Dell Demps go out there, negotiate a trade, and then step in. To me, that is completely unfair and a little ridiculous. So no matter the end result, and it definitely ended up better for the Rockets. You could also argue that it ended up better for the New Orleans franchise. I don't think that the way the NBA went about it was appropriate. Even if the end result ended up better for a lot of teams, really for everybody except for the Lakers, it was a very bizarre circumstance. But what ended up happening after that initial trade was voided, and it was very mixed. To give you all a little bit of a backstory at the time, I'm sure a lot of you guys remember, but this was December 2011. This was after two of three consecutive kind of middling 500 season in which the Rockets seemed right in the middle of that mediocrity treadmill, which everyone hated. They didn't have James Harden yet. They wouldn't get him for a few more months. That was October 2012. So the Rockets just seemed to be kind of wandering aimlessly. They weren't bad enough to get a top draft pick. Les Alexander wasn't really in support of tanking, but a lot of fans, they just did not see how they could be bad enough to get a transformational player in the draft. They didn't really have cap room because, of course, they had all these veterans. And so the Rockets were just sort of in no man's land. And a lot of the initial reaction was actually negative. People were skeptical of, well, do you really want to go after Pau Gasol? Are they close enough to make a move like that to have this sort of aggressive spending? A lot of folks, and they might be right. Certainly, I'm not going to complain about what ended up happening, which was using some of those assets to ultimately get James Harden and then Dwight Howard a few months after that. So certainly, big picture, it ended up better for the Rockets that this trade did not work out. However, I understand what Daryl was thinking at the time. However, the fan perception, folks didn't like it because they didn't like going all in with a core Lowry, Gasol, presumably Nene, that essentially was a big question mark as opposed to the best player on a championship contender. Now, to get back to the David Stern component, he, of course, was kind of running the New Orleans franchise essentially as the owner at the time, and he said over this past weekend on a podcast that even after the original deal fell apart, they were hoping to redo the deal. And the backstory on that, of course, there was a lot of outrage, specifically from the three teams involved, the Lakers, the Rockets, and the Hornets. They had this deal, and at the end, the league office just stepped in with this quote-unquote basketball reasons. A lot of folks around the league thought it was absolutely ridiculous. So I think what the league was hoping for was essentially a face-saving mechanism, a way that everybody could get the marquee players they desired and they could bury this incident without it becoming a long-lasting thing. And the quotes from Stern, the podcast, are that over the course of the weekend, we thought we could redo the deal. We really thought that Houston would be ready to part with Lowry, and we had a trade lined up for Odom that would have gotten us a good first-round draft pick. Not we, but my basketball folks. He's referring to New Orleans in that case. But Mitch Kupchak at the time panicked and moved Odom to Dallas, so the piece wasn't even there for us to play with at the time. So that was it, just about what was good for the then New Orleans Hornets. My thoughts on that, and I said it on Twitter at the time, I think that is some serious wishful thinking. I think Kupchak moved on because, of course, he has good relationships around the league. I'm sure he and Daryl Morey were in a lot of contact. Why in the world would the Rockets, after negotiating a deal that they thought was good for them, just decide to throw in Kyle Lowry, who, by the way, was their most marketable asset on the entire team at the time? For some perspective, a few months later, Kyle Lowry was traded for a guaranteed lottery pick that ended up becoming the foundation of the trade for James Harden. Kyle Lowry was a very valuable trade chip to the Rockets, or player, however you want to define it. Lowry at the time was just 25 years old. He'd come off his first season as a true starter, breakout-level player, close to 14 points a game, 7 assists, and of course he was still improving as a shooter. That was when he really developed a three-point shot, and of course we've seen that only continue to grow in his time in Toronto, to where now Lowry, who's a free agent again, at age 31 right now, is easily scoring over 22 points a game, 7 assists, really one of the better point guards in the entire NBA. But at the time, the Rockets did not have a lot of assets, and Kyle Lowry was as marketable as it gets. The Rockets were not going to throw him in that deal. That's ridiculous. I think they were hoping that Gasol, Lowry, and Nene were going to be their core moving forward. That was what they wanted to build around, and ultimately, when the deal didn't work out, they had to go the other direction, eventually stripping it down, trading Lowry for the guaranteed lottery pick, and for a second it looked like the Rockets might be willing to take a step back, but what ended up happening, of course, before the 2012 season, just before it, that was when Oklahoma City kind of had to make the decision about the Harden extension. When they didn't get the math done, they then shipped, just a few days before the season, Harden to Houston for a package headlined by that guaranteed lottery pick that the Rockets got as part of the Kyle Lowry trade. But to sum up my view on Stern's comments this past weekend, I think that's the basically the best way to say face, to say that, well, we were working on it. And I think that's what they were hoping for. However, I don't think it was realistic at all. The Rockets had a deal lined up in which they were going to get Gasol, who back then was, I would say, if not a top 10 player, very close in his prime. I know he's slowed down a lot since, but in his prime, Pau Gasol was as good of a big man as there was. It would have been a decent upgrade for the Rockets, and Daryl Morey worked long and hard to get a deal that if you were going to get someone like Gasol at that point in his career, I think he was in his low 30s, you had to be ready to, if not contend, be very good right then to make it worthwhile. So no, the Rockets were not going to just throw in Kyle Lowry to make it work. I think that was the idea from the New Orleans folks, meaning the league office, because they saw it as the easiest way to make the deal seem more palatable to the fan base around the league, quote-unquote basketball reason, whatever you want to call it. I think that was the hope. However, I don't think the Rockets were ever going to do it, and I think that the Lakers knew that, and of course that's why the Lakers, led by then GM Mitch Kupchak, were willing to send Odom to Dallas and ultimately derail the entire thing, and then the pieces went where Chris Paul went to the Clippers with a package headlined by Eric Gordon coming back to New Orleans. Now, looking back in hindsight, the interesting thing for the Rockets, and it's very atypical for what we've seen from Daryl Morey his first 10 years or so in Houston, is that that core, Gasol, Lowry, and presumably Nene. Now again, Gasol, Nene, and ironically, Nene ended up here a few years later anyway, but none of those guys are the type that you think of as true an A-lister, the guy on a championship contender, the alpha dog. And that's a little bit unlike the Daryl Morey that we have seen in recent offseason, who seems to be willing to be very patient, aggressive, waiting for the guy who's not just any guy, not even just a pretty good player, but waiting for the guy to go all in. We saw the way they were willing to kind of bide their time and not spend just to spend, waiting to the Chris Bosh deal that almost worked out. And so I think we've seen Daryl generally be very patient, but the thing to keep in mind, he's able to be patient now because you have James Harden in the prime of his career. You know you're going to have options. Back then, the Rockets, they had a lot of nice individual pieces, but in terms of a straw to stir the drink, an all-star level player, they seemed very far away from any. So I think even getting a fringe all-star type guy, a couple of fringe top 20, top 25 guys around the league, that was a huge thing. So I think they were more willing to gamble back then. The other thing that I really think plays in, look at the league the way it was in December 2011. Back then, the Dallas Mavericks were just coming off a NBA title. The Mavs had an aging Dirk Nowitzki and a bunch of just random veterans, the likes of Jason Kidd, Jason Terry, guys that were all generally past their prime back then. One star, and that star was getting older. A lot of role players just kind of oddly pieced together, and it worked out. But as much as you guys have heard me in recent months talk about how in the modern NBA, the bar is so high because of Golden State and Cleveland, it was not like that in 2011. I guess the closest thing, the Mavs just won the title, I guess the closest thing to it was probably the Thunder. Back then they had Durant, Westbrook, and James Harden, but at that time they hadn't even made the finals yet. Also had the question of were they going to be willing to keep that team together to spend on James Harden's extension. Ultimately, they were not. I guess you could have argued that if that trade had gone through, you would have had Paul with the Lakers, and of course they would have got a lot of press with Chris Paul, Kobe Bryant, Andrew Bynum, but you have to look at the bigger term trends. Kobe by that point was already clearly on the downhill side of his career. Andrew Bynum already had a ton of concerns with his knees. So even though that team would have looked great on paper, Chris Paul with the Lakers, would it ultimately have led to a championship? I'm not so sure because, again, Odom would have been out, Gasol would have been out, and those guys were huge in 2009 and 2010. Essentially, you would have been depending on an aging Kobe, his body to hold up, and then Andrew Bynum, whose knees were essentially a ticking time bomb. So I don't think the Lakers, I think Daryl Morey understood the long game and knew that even if in that first year or two in 2012, maybe they could have made one run, but I don't think that deal was really about the Lakers in the short term. I think maybe long term would have been good for the Lakers because you would have had Chris Paul to kind of bridge the gap to future generations of the Lakers and have Chris Paul, you know, as one of those guys in free agency that you can use to sell your franchise, because we saw them try and do it with Kobe, but it just didn't work out because in addition to whatever issues that Kobe had from a chemistry standpoint with a lot of players, including Dwight Howard, there's also the matter players on the league just knew that he was in his last years, and it's just not that appealing to play with a guy who's in his upper 30s and on his way out. That's just not really a big selling point. So I think maybe it would have positioned the Lakers from a perception standpoint better, but I don't think it really would have made a true contender. The Thunder, yeah, they had a lot of talent, but as I said earlier, hadn't even made it to the finals yet. There were big questions about Harden. And the Mavs, I mean, they were already clearly on the downhill, but the league was weak enough that even Dirk Nowitzki in 2011 and a bunch of misfits were able to win the entire thing. That's how low the bar was then. So I think that's why, in addition to the Rockets being a little more desperate back then, I think that's why Daryl Morey was willing to go as aggressively as he did for a team that did not, at least traditionally, look like a world title contender. Because back then, when the bar is that low, you could kind of bet on maybe the stars line. Maybe you get the right chemistry. It kind of reminds me a little bit, not saying the teams are comparable, but think back to the 2004 Pistons, who didn't really have a star at all. Now, they had a lot of pretty good players. Certainly, you look at Billups, Rip Hamilton, Tayshaun Prince, Rasheed Wallace, and Ben Wallace. But it's crazy in today's NBA how good the teams are to think that that team not just won an NBA title, but won it in five games. But the bar was that low to where you could take a team of a lot of, I would say, B-plus level pieces, and if you got the right chemistry, you could make a really deep run. Hell, I even think back to 2009 when the Rockets, even after losing Yao Ming, took the Lakers, the eventual champion Lakers, to seven games. The league was nowhere near as good back then, so even if the Lowry, Nene, Gasol core didn't really seem to make a lot of sense from the standpoint of who's your Michael Jordan, who's your Kobe Bryant, who's your alpha, so to speak, at the time, the league was not really that good. So the Rockets would have been able, and I think in my opinion, it would have made them at least a mid-tier playoff team. And even if it didn't work out, it would have positioned them to where in potential free agency periods in the future, they might have been a little more desirable. I know that at the time was a big deal for Daryl Morey. Again, though, I do want to stress, in hindsight, yes, I'm incredibly glad that that deal ended up falling apart. I wasn't as down on it at the time as a lot of Rockets fans were because the dynamics I was just explaining in terms of how weak the league was at the time. I did think there was an opportunity. However, clearly you look at what they were eventually able to do in terms of creating more salary cap space and flexibility moving forward. By not really going all in with that group, you were able to trade Lowry for a lottery pick, which ended up becoming the foundation of the Harden deal. Also, because you weren't really committing long-term to contracts like Gasol and Nene, you had the flexibility 18 months later to successfully sign Dwight Howard in free agency. And clearly, the James Harden and Dwight Howard Rockets were a better team in every sense than the Kyle Lowry, not Kevin Martin, because he would have gone out in the trade, but the Kyle Lowry, Pau Gasol, Nene core would have been. So definitely no regrets. I just like looking back in Stern's comments, reminding me of it, because it shows you, even a guy like Daryl Morey, there's always a constant evolution. And if there's something I take out of that deal in terms of predictive value moving forward, I really don't think in hindsight that there's a lot of regret in terms of, wow, we really shouldn't have done that, or we got away with one. My hunch, I don't think Daryl thinks he was off base. I think that Daryl thinks the trade was perfectly justifiable, it maybe even good, given the dynamics at the time. And then what ended up happening, the dynamics change. And now, I mean, the Rockets have a substantially better team than that, but yet they're still not really that close to contention because the bar with Golden State and Cleveland is so incredibly, ridiculously high, and it seems to poise to continue that way for the foreseeable future because no one on either of those two teams, at least in terms of the stars, seems that close to having any kind of significant decline in terms of their skill sets. So the primary takeaway that I have from what happened with that December 2011 void and what it tells me about Daryl Morey is that his approach is always subject to change. If he thinks the window is open, he might do some unconventional things to try and take advantage of that window. And conversely, even if he has a really good team, if he doesn't think that the window is particularly open, he's not going to force a deal. And I think there's a lot of value in that, to having an approach that varies based on the context at the time, because depending on when you build a team can make all the difference. As I said, talking about those early 2000s eras in the NBA, really I'd say most of the entire decade of the 2000s. You look at some of those teams. I thought about this earlier today because Matt Moore did an exercise, HP Basketball on Twitter, ranking several championship teams between 2001 and 2015. And so you have several teams in there. I would say like the 2004 Pistons, I said earlier. Maybe the 2003 Spurs. Now, Tim Duncan at the time was incredible, top 10 all-time level, but that was a really flawed supporting cast back then. Even the Lakers in 2009, they were underwhelming. Certainly the 2011 Mavs, there were a lot of underwhelming winners. And if you find yourself in that particular era, then you might be more willing to make a move that kind of runs counter to some trends. Whereas if you find yourself in the era that the Rockets are in now, it kind of cuts the other way. You can have a really good team, which the Rockets do, but you still have to be more careful in terms of the upgrades you make, because, yeah, you might make your team a little bit better, but if your goal is to actually win a title, then you don't want to make an upgrade just for the sake of making an upgrade if it's going to potentially limit your flexibility to do what it really takes to take a true step forward towards contention. So to me, good GMs always have to adjust to the era that they're in. I don't blame Daryl Morey for not seeing the future, so to speak, because I don't think anyone knew that the, at least in the Western Conference, the teaming up was going to happen to the extent that it did. Now, certainly, back then there was the Heat, but they were an Eastern Conference team. In terms of the dynamics of the West, I don't think anyone really saw what was going to happen with the Warriors just a couple of years down the line. But good GMs, they're able to adjust their approach. And as we look at the Rockets for the foreseeable future, I would just say keep that in the back of your mind, because I don't think they're going to pass on upgrading their team moderately if they can do it without giving up any sort of long-term financial flexibility. But I do think even if there are certain guys who can make them a little bit better in the short term, they might not do it if they feel like there's a significant cost to their long-term flexibility and things they need to do to truly get to that level where the Warriors are right now. I think context of where the rest of the league is at is always important, because sometimes there are moves that might seem to run a little counter of certain trends that might work out if the league is weak enough. And conversely, there are moves that look great on paper, but they might not really be worth anything to your long-term championship potential if the league is that good. So anyway, that will about do it for my kind of retrospective look back on the failed 2011 trade that would have sent Pau Gasol to Houston. As I said, ultimately, it ended up better for almost everybody. Maybe not the Lakers, but certainly I think the Hornets were a little better off, at least in the short term, with the package they got. Certainly the Rockets were better off waiting and getting James Harden and Dwight Howard out of many of the assets that were that would have been spent in that trade, either in that trade or the salaries required to put that nucleus together. So I think the Rockets are better off, but seeing Stern's comments made me think a little bit more about the dynamics at the time and what it tells us about Daryl Morey. So hope that was a good kind of dead week topic, because I know there's not a lot going on right now, and it may still take a little bit more time before we get some concrete rumors going on. So thought that would be an interesting show, but folks, tell me if you like it or not. On Twitter, at Ben Dubose, at Lockdown Rockets, email at LockdownRockets@gmail.com. Excuse me, just let us know what your thoughts are. If you like that, if you do, we might have some more shows like that in the future. We can really go over the entire history of the franchise, but I want to pay particular emphasis, I would say, to developments within the past 10 years, because obviously, if there's something that Carroll Dawson or a prior GM does, that's not really going to tell us much of anything about what the Rockets are going to do this offseason or any future trade deadline, free agency period, as opposed to if it's something that Daryl Morey did or didn't do, then there might be a lot of value to take out of that in terms of predicting what his future is going to be. So that's why I really wanted to focus on that when I saw David Stern's comments. But let me know if you like it. If you want to stick to 100% current day and nothing else, I can certainly do that. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day, and we'll be talking a little bit more current Rockets later in the week as we start to swing back to true basketball, the finals coming up, and then, of course, the draft just 3 weeks from this Thursday. Rockets aren't drafting in the first round because they sent that pick to the Lakers as part of the Lou Williams trade at the deadline. They do have two mid-second round picks, so we can start to talk about that a little bit more as well. But for now, I hope everyone enjoys their holiday, and I will talk to you guys again in just a few short days.